The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. It is good to be back. We've been gone for 2 weeks, and you know what we found out? Nothing has changed. The same news, the same kind of... Well, you know what? We can start with some good news. There is news of a boycott, which I don't like boycotts, but I have evidence that I would like to start with that will shock you, that a company has decided, you know what, we can't be a part of that. Now, there's good news and bad news on this. I don't like boycotts for a reason. However, common sense may not be so uncommon. We begin there right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. Let me start with this. Delta and the Bank of America have dropped their sponsorship of something that they have a long-term sponsor. Now, is art political speech? Yes. Can it be political speech? Yes. Does it have to be political speech? No. Is Shakespeare political speech? I've seen Shakespeare. I've seen Macbeth done as they were all dressed as Germans, and they were Nazis. Yes, it's political speech. It was political speech when it came out. Shakespeare in the Park has happened in New York City for a very long time. Shakespeare in the Park happens in almost every American city, at least big city. New York has decided to put Shakespeare in the Park and Julius Caesar on. And what happened was Julius Caesar, instead of being dressed in a toga, is dressed in a blue suit and a very long tie. And it's set in contemporary America, and he's the president of the United States, and he looks like Donald Trump.
And his wife speaks with a Slavic accent.
Is that a problem? I mean, I don't understand why you had to bring that up. And so there's a scene in Julius Caesar that includes a very bloody murder, an assassination. Obviously, it's Julius Caesar.
A spoiler alert.
Sorry. Unreal. I know it just came out and we're all flocking to it. Bank of America issued this statement. Bank of America supports art programs worldwide, including an 11-year partnership with the Public Theater and Shakespeare in the Park. Public Theater chose to present Julius Caesar in such a way that was intended to provoke and offend. Had this intention been made known to us, we would have decided not to sponsor it. We're withdrawing our funding from this production.
Nice.
Wow. That's unbelievable.
That is.
Now, immediately you say, nice.
But we don't like boycotts.
I don't like boycotts when it comes to sponsorship of art. First of all, I don't agree with this. I would have been offended by this. I wouldn't have liked it. I would have gotten up and gone, okay, I get it. But I would have also kind of expected it from New York. Okay. And I wouldn't have liked it. And I'm torn because I'm glad that somebody says, you know, we have higher standards than, you know, Griffin holding on to a severed head of the president.
Right.
There's no place for that.
It is. We are learning that there is a line
on criticism
of conservatives or Republicans or whoever,
yeah,
which basically is limited at the decapitated head of the
particular
person.
Depictions of murdering the president.
It's about it.
We've always said that.
It's not cool.
We've always said that.
Yeah.
We said that under George Bush. We said that under Barack Obama. We've said that under Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. You don't do that. You don't do that. You don't even joke about it. You don't get near any of that. So I don't like any of it. However, we're getting into a place to where if we keep ratcheting up these boycotts, companies are just not going to spend money on sponsoring things that you're going to like.
It leads to a very boring world.
Because who's going to pay for it?
Right. when there's something interesting or intriguing. Again, I don't think this is that.
No, however, I don't either.
I don't need an example of it, but
that's
stay,
why, that's why I'm
everything.
Kind of putting this into good news category, because it's common sense. You don't do that
and
about the president.
You wouldn't expect Bank of America to join this boycott.
No.
Delta, I don't know. I'm not sure of their political leanings, but Bank of America, you would never expect that from them.
So is it an organized boycott in which people are pressuring these companies to do it, or did they just happen to
I think they just decided to pull out.
I didn't see anything.
Well, you know that I can't imagine that somebody from... Well, maybe they were.
Who would even know? I mean, Shakespeare in the Park, who would even know that it occurred? I mean, it had to be some Bank of America executive who went.
Yeah, Bank of America just said it withdrew its financial support. There's nothing wrong with that.
No,
that's great.
And I would guess that the next presentation or production that they have that
they'll
isn't about murdering the president, they'll probably sponsor.
I will tell you this. It doesn't say anything in here about an organized boycott at all. What it does say is Jesse Green, the New York Times co-chief theater critic, wrote in his review, even a cursory reading of the play, the kind that many American teenagers give it in high school, does not advocate assassination. He says that the killing is an unmitigated disaster for Rome, no matter how patriotic the intentions. However, Green says that the production may leave some theater goers, including those who loathe Mr. Trump, to wonder if perhaps they've gone too far. When the New York Times theater section says, perhaps you've gone too far, you've gone too far. So, Republicans tell Trump to come clean on possible Comey tapes.
Yeah. Does anyone believe there's actually Comey tapes?
No, they've been out already.
No. We didn't address Comey, so let me just say this. I believe him on the Loretta Lynch thing. Does anybody here not believe him on the Loretta Lynch thing?
I believed him on the Loretta Lynch thing.
Okay, so we can't pick and choose on where he has credibility and where he doesn't. He seems like a credible guy, but who knows? There's a long way to go on this one. That's just one voice. Let's see. Now, let's also see the Democrats go after Loretta Lynch. I mean, I watched that and I'm thinking, well, shouldn't we have a hearing on Loretta Lynch too? I mean, this one's a long time coming. Shouldn't we be looking into what she did as well? But all of that aside, the one thing I got out of the testimony last week, and we weren't here, so I wasn't able to cover it, is this. The Russians are coming. Did anybody miss that? Was I the only one that sound came through on my television? The Russians are coming.
Hey, oddly, I guess the reason why that wasn't a big deal is because there was no disagreement on it.
I guess so, because all we talked about was, well, about the tapes, and what about the Russians? And what was crazy is he kept saying it. You know, I want to make sure that we really stay focused on the fact that this was an unprecedented hit on the United States.
So you took notes, Mr. Comey, after you got done talking to President Trump?
Again, I want to just say, this was a rehearsal for what they're going to do in 18 and 20, so the Russians are coming.
Yeah, but would you describe your notes as contemporaneous and copious?
It was really amazing.
Yeah, everyone wants their political lens.
Even the people, both Republicans and Democrats, responded to him with, yes, this is really bad about this is really bad about Russia. But then I didn't see any of the coverage.
Did you take notes when you talked to Loretta Lynch?
And Megyn Kelly is in trouble now on both sides of the aisle. Megyn Kelly.
Which is weird. I don't get that.
I don't get this either. Okay, so Huffington Post, you would expect.
How can you give a quarter to somebody like Alex Jones?
Okay, all right, I get that. But now the right is also saying,
how can you give quarter to Alex Jones?
Okay. Is that what they're saying?
Yeah, red state is.
Because
they're saying that what she's doing is legitimizing him.
But I think there was an argument to be made about legitimizing Alex Jones.
When you're making fun of somebody, are you legitimizing him? I don't know that she's necessarily doing that, but she's providing him the forum to make fun of himself.
Yeah, here's the thing.
He's his own worst enemy.
A good journalist shuts up, asks the questions, and shuts up, and lets them hang themselves. I want you just to hear the promo, and tell me after hearing the promo for Megyn Kelly that this is going to be an interview that there's no hanging of oneself in.
His authoritarianism knows humanity's awakening, and it's moving against humanity on a planetary scale. The great global battle for the future of our species is being fought right now.
They call you the most paranoid man in America. Is that true?
Absolutely not. A paranoid person will be hiding out in their house, not venturing out in public. I go out there on the street and battle Black Lives Matter, the communists, point blank range.
We talked controversies and conspiracies. 9/11.
Now, 9/11 was an inside job. But when I say inside job, it means criminal elements in our government working with Saudi Arabia and others wanted to frame Iraq for it. Just a fact.
Sandy Hook.
Well, Sandy Hook's complex because I've had debates where we've devil's advocate said the whole story's true. And then I've had debates where I've said that none of it's true.
If you're taking both sides of the issue, then
that debate.
I guess that's okay.
Okay. It's complicated because I've had debates because where I've said the whole thing is true and the whole thing is not true.
So I've complicated the issue by taking both sides of it.
You said devil's advocate's arguments, but like,
Baloney.
Yeah, that is an absolute lie he's covering.
Crap.
But beyond that, it's like, do you need a devil's advocate on whether Sandy Hook occurred?
No.
Is there a need
only
for
in
that?
Alex Jones's world.
Yeah.
I've had debates, played devil's advocate, where I said the sun is an actual god.
And I made that argument.
But I've also said the sun is just a giant flaming orb of gas.
Say parents faked their children's death, people get very angry.
Yeah, well, I know, but they don't get angry about the 500,000 dead Iraqis from the sanctions, or they don't get angry about all the
illegal. That's a dodge.
That's a dodge. Yeah.
Yeah. A Buick. What the hell is that?
They
don't get angry about all the sanctions.
What about the Black Plague that killed over 30 million people in Europe in the 1600s? What about that? How come nobody screamed about that? Nobody's talking about it. Why aren't you covering that, Megan?
Because you just said...
What does that have to do with anything?
You just said that parents faked the death of their child.
Yeah, well, what about the Armenian crisis in the 1917 era? Anybody talking about that?
Wow, no.
That's crazy.
But wait, there's more.
No, it's not a dodge. The media never covers all the evil wars it's promoted, all the
that
big
doesn't
things.
Excuse what you did and said about Newtown. Here's
the difference.
Stop for a second. I just want to say, again, the reason why I'm playing this is because both the right and the left are saying that she is legitimizing him.
Right. She's hammering him so far. You're right, letting him hang himself, but asking and pushing back when needed.
All right. Yeah. But you're still like, okay, he sounds a little crazy, but, you know, NBC, right? This is just the promo. Mm-hmm. Listen.
Looked at all the angles of Newtown, and I made my statements long before the media even picked up on it. We didn't get any of the really important stuff.
What do you mean? We talked about all the important stuff.
Well, here's the big one they always make fun of me. You probably want to throw this in there. 30 years ago, they began creating animal-human hybrids. Isn't that the big story Megyn Kelly should be doing?
It's huge, yeah. I mean,
why isn't she doing
that? Covering that.
Well, maybe,
honestly, will say he's right about that. She's not covering it.
Is it possible she is one, and that's why she's hiding it? Maybe it was longer
than
that. The question is, why on God's green earth would you bring up animal-human hybrids?
Out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere. That's
bizarre.
Something that your he PR people say, if she's, look, we've made a deal, she's not going to bring up the animal-human hybrid thing, okay? If she asks about it, just shut your mouth.
He brought that up in the press conference after his trial,
same thing. It's something he believes very deeply in.
Yes, he did.
Okay, well, there's your legitimate interview coming Sunday with Megyn Kelly.
Glenn Beck.
Mercury.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
I want to thank the provider of my data plan for ratting me out. On vacation, I'm up at the ranch, which, of course, has, you know, quote, no television or internet.
Why does that need to be quoted?
That's in quotation marks because it does have.
Well, for a long time,
television and internet.
They didn't know that the family didn't know that I hid the satellite dish behind the fireplace chimney. Okay, so up on the roof, you can't really see it unless you're standing in one angle. And then you could see it, and nobody had seen it. And I put it there for emergency use only.
Well, you, I mean, you're in the business
exactly
of
news. Exactly right.
In a crisis, you need to be connected.
Yes.
You're not going to turn it on normally.
Yes.
But in a crisis, it needs to be there.
And so for the first two or three years, that was never connected to anything. Then this damn wireless happened.
Oh,
okay. and then what happens?
Mandarin.
Something else.
House of Cards. House of Cards comes out.
A crisis. Wow. In the White House?
Yes.
Oh, my
White House crisis. Thank you, Stu.
Yeah.
So I get up after the last episodes won't load anymore. Something about data. And my data provider happens to let it slip to my wife because she is on the, apparently on the
email alerts
that we've upgraded your data plan. And so my wife is like, what data plan are we updating?
You know, it's, the work.
I don't
the work
know
data.
Who
the
is.
The crisis data plan.
Who is at our house watching something like, she said, House of Cards. So I did finally get through it, but not unscarred. Really good.
Yeah.
That was very good.
Yeah, so you really liked it.
I really liked it.
I liked it. It does get more and more absurd by the second.
Does it?
I don't know. I think it does. I mean, it does seem
does
to get
it?
More and more ridiculous.
I don't know,
in what places? I don't want to spoil anything, but what places does it get?
It's been out for 2 weeks.
It's been like
2 weeks, 13 hours of television.
We happen to be on vacation. You don't have 13 hours, then you have your priorities wrong.
I had four flights on vacation.
Yeah.
So I had lots of airplane time. I watched the whole thing on my phone.
Where did you go? Like New Zealand or something?
No, I went on two trips. I went to see my mom, and we went on a little family vacation. So I had
his little family vacation sounds shady, doesn't it?
Sure does.
No, it's just not exciting. We went to Philadelphia. So it's like, well, why would you go to Philadelphia? Well, we had a lot of friends there. We may have taken an Eagles stadium tour. I mean, that may have been part of the reason we went there. I'm not going to say that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Your wife, she's hooked up. You know what I mean?
I'm a catch. I'll say that.
Oh, my gosh.
I'll say that.
Honey, someday we're going on a Philadelphia Eagles stadium tour.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a promise I made when we were dating and finally was able to fulfill it.
Right.
Yeah, so I had a lot of phone time,
and
watched the entire thing, and it was really good. I do think every season escalates the amount of absurdity that's actually happening. But it ended
in
a place.
I found it terrifying because I'm like, could be the last guy, could be this guy, could be the next guy.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all that stuff with the terror, the way they're playing the terror stuff.
It's interesting. It seems as if the actual world takes its cues from House of Cards, and like the people in Washington are like, oh, wow, we can get away with that too. And they just just keep doing the things that happened in the previous season.
Kind of like what they used to say about MTV. They don't know which is the dog and which is the tail. If culture was following MTV or MTV was following culture, it's like that now with the House of Cards. You're like, is this the news or is this House of Cards?
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So I read several books on vacation. Brad Thor, is he coming on? Is he going to be on?
Yeah.
His new book is tremendous.
Really?
Tremendous. Really good book.
2 weeks from now.
It comes out in 2 weeks? Or he's going to be on in two weeks?
He's going to be on in 2 weeks.
It's tremendous. Also read a business book called Friction that is, you can read it, it's this book. I brought it in.
Jeffy has a business that's called Friction, too.
No. I think that's called Lubrication.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
No, it's Friction, too.
Friction, too, yeah. Anyway, this is really easy to read. I mean, it's almost like a kid's book. It's, you know, it's got big words in it and stuff. You can
just
read
about
it.
The same.
You can read it in, yeah. You can read it really in one sitting. It is It's all about disruption and all about what's coming in business, what's coming in life, on how everything, no matter what you're doing, Uber is your competition. Doesn't matter what you do, what you make, Uber is your competition. And here's why. Because as everything else becomes easier, when I can just call and, oh, here's the car, it's ready. As people innovate and reduce friction on other things, your business, if it stays stationary, becomes a point of friction. They're like, I got to go down to the bakery and actually get those donuts.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah. No, I mean, you're Stu and I were talking about that this morning.
I heard an interview with a guy who created Instacart. No, I had never heard of Instacart. I know it's been around for a while. It's a California. I think it started in California. But it's basically you go on your app and you go through every grocery store in your area, which is on it at least here. And that's certainly not the case everywhere. But you go through, pick the grocery store, buy all the stuff that you want just online. And then someone, an actual individual like Uber, picking you up in a car, goes to the grocery store.
Instacart shopper.
Is trained to pick the best produce, is trained to find all the best stuff there, knows where everything is in the store, so you don't have the delay of looking
How
around.
How much is this service?
Nothing. It costs nothing.
What do you mean it costs nothing?
They have a tip situation, which you would obviously tip the driver. And then they have like a 10% service fee, which is optional. You don't have to pay it.
You don't have to be nice to the Uber driver either, but good luck getting a good Uber driver next time.
Right. Although, yeah, I mean, I don't know if they have a rating system or not on this. They may or may not. But then they were going through the store and like, you know, if I ordered orange Monster drink and they're out of orange Monster drink, they will send me via the app a suitable replacement and ask me to approve it. So I can make all this, I can just like, if I feel like it, I can just make all the decisions, yes, no, I don't want that one, just throw that one back on the shelf, whatever. They bring it to your house. They, if you would like, bring it into your house, into your kitchen, and set it down. They won't apparently put it in my refrigerator yet.
Oh, wow, you've lost
me. Which is infuriating.
Yeah.
But for no cost.
That's crazy.
It's incredible. I will never walk into a grocery store in my life after using it.
They just added some new zip codes here in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, too.
So what is the name of this?
Instacart. And a lot of grocery stores will do it on their own. But like for, you know, like
Walmart, I think, is doing it.
Yeah, like Walmart does one where I know you can pick up.
I tell you, this is the point of this. So now you're a grocery store and you're not a part of that. You're done.
You're dead.
Yeah. You're done. And no matter what you're doing, because convenience is becoming so accessible to everyone, if you're not upgrading, if you have a single point of friction, people aren't going to come to you.
We're not going to need our legs anymore.
Yeah,
eventually our legs will just evolve away from us.
I will tell you, I was up in Idaho and for the vacation and up in the mountains. But the people there are just, it's like the town I grew up in. It's just really great. But, you know, I had to buy extra data. You know, it's not, you know, unlimited data, et cetera, et cetera. Nobody's using Uber up there. And I really thought there's going to come a time where people come from that part of the country and they go to the big city and they're like, what the
like
hell
Abraham
is
Lincoln waking up and like looking around.
Life
is so different.
Definitely. Life is becoming so different now in the big cities. It's not there yet, but we're maybe 5 years from being so different in the cities that they'll have skills that we won't have, like grocery shopping. You know, they'll come to a big city and they'll be like, what? How are you? What is that?
It's true. I mean, I make decisions based on this. Like, for example, I make dining decisions. Like, I'm going out on a date night. I make dining decisions specifically on what restaurants are on OpenTable. That app, which lets you make reservations on the app. So I don't have to call anybody. I don't have to talk to anybody because I don't want to talk to anybody. So I make reservations.
You
now, there might be a restaurant.
And Pat is the grumpy one.
Are you sure?
I don't think so,
I don't think so. But it's just easier. I don't have to call up and try to figure it out. I go on there. I can see a list. I can filter it by the type of food I want to eat. I can filter it by location. I can look at all the restaurants on a map. I can pick the ones that have availability in the certain time I want to be there and see all the options
I
want.
I will tell you,
I think about this all the time. If you're a restaurant, this goes to what you're talking about with this book. Why would you not be on this? Because
you have to be.
I am sure there are tons of people like me that do that and make the decisions.
This book
based.
Makes the point that if this is the worst part of friction, that if you don't have, you know, your product department, if you're in the website business, you know, you don't have your product department looking at all of the leaders in high tech and figuring out how to model yourself after, you're going to be left in the dust because with every innovation, people have higher expectations for everybody. Well, they're doing it. How come you're not doing it? It's honestly, talking to my son, this is probably 3 years ago, we watched the Disney Man in Space, then Man on the Moon, which were really cool for me at least. And then we watched Man on Mars. And I said, man, someday we're going to go to Mars. And he said, we've already been there. And I said, no, we haven't. And he said, Dad, yes, we haven't. For a minute, I started doubting myself on this 9-year-old punk. And I'm like, no, we haven't. He said, Dad, the rover was up there. Yeah. And I said, that's not the same as humans going. Yeah. And he's like, what's the difference? And I said, huge, an actual person on Mars. And then it started kind of falling apart for him. He's like, well, why haven't we done that? Because it's
hard.
Because it's hard. Yeah. It's hard. I don't think there's any definition of hard left for people. Yeah. And there's no wonderment at all. You know, I every time I go out and I'm away from a city where you can actually see the stars, I always come back with, I think that's the problem. I think the problem is, like in New York or any big city, you see all of man's creation. And you don't, until you're around a campfire in a dark area, look up and go, holy cow, are we small? What is all of this? And you start pondering the big things. We don't ponder the big things. You know, nobody's sitting around at night and wondering what the meaning of life is because they were walking outside and saw the moon. We're not thinking these thoughts anymore because everything that man is building is so big, so encompassing, so self-enclosing. And we're losing because of just the brightness of the cities, the stars, and perspective. It's really amazing when my kids went outside.
There are more than 6 stars in the sky. Contrary to everybody who lives in the DFW and
I don't
can
know.
See 6 of them, maybe.
Well, I'm not sure because 4 of those
Montana
are planes.
And you look up and you see that, you forget, at least I did, I forgot how
awesome,
absolutely amazing it is when you look up in the night sky.
It's really incredible. Here. It's really incredible.
It. Yeah.
And you've completely lost perspective on where we are, who we are, and that wonderment. You know, Tanya and I sat in the yard looking up at the moon, and we're just looking at it going, men were up there, and it used to be a big deal. We go to Mars. I don't think it'll be a big deal.
No. No way.
That's pretty big.
It'll be big, but it will not be like the when the entire Earth,
all the kids
everyone
are like,
on Earth.
What do you mean we're not there? Why haven't we been there already? What are you talking about?
Tell me what the thing could be that everyone on Earth stops to watch it. What would that be? And watch and man and say, holy cow, not look at that horror. But holy cow, look at that accomplishment.
The media would have you believe it was the James Comey testimony, but it did not.
Apparently.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BACK.
Mercury. This
is the Glenn Beck Program.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for listening to the Glenn Beck Program. We are back off vacation. What did we bring back?
One interesting thought I saw from 538.com, they had a writer who had a book situation. So they had to go off social media for 3 months. And they wrote about, hey, how did this affect my opinion of the news cycle? Like, they went through all these big events not being connected to social media. And here's part of it. It dawned on me that I mostly stopped visiting websites directly and instead had been following the recommendations in my feeds to wherever they might lead me. Mm. My reading was no longer deliberate, but curated by external forces that may or may not have aligned with my interests. I ceded control of my most valuable currency, my attention.
Unbelievable. Yeah. That's the way most people do it.
Totally. Like, that is, yeah. You just get led down these things, these roads, and you're not necessarily even reading what's most interesting to you or what's most important to you.
Well, I mean, we all do that.
Yeah.
I think it's 80% of traffic now from most sites comes from what's called the side doors. So people are not going to theblaze.com or the newyorktimes.com. They're getting it from their Facebook feed. And that leads them in for the side door. So they're only getting one story. And on that story, the average time is like 46 seconds or...
Oh, geez. If it's that high, I'd be stunned.
Yeah. I keep wanting to say it's like 6 seconds, but it can't be that. It's some extraordinarily low number. And it gives you time enough just to read the headlines and glance and move on. That's how people are getting their news now. And it's really kind of frightening.
Yeah, I was listening to an interview with someone who's a writer about these, like long form pieces. Uh-huh. You know, these old school long, like the magazine profile, right? Those old school things that we don't really seem to have anymore, except for a few sources. And they were talking about how they would spend so much time writing that last paragraph. If you watched House of Cards, which I will not give anything away here, I promise, but the last few moments, as you would expect of the season, were amazing, and that's how articles used to be. Yeah. That last paragraph was crafted. It was perfectly worded. It led you to that exact point.
And it was referenced three times before.
Oh, yeah. It set you up in the article.
Yeah.
And what they found is now with the digital world, they realized, first of all, the first paragraph is the only one anyone reads. And it goes down to the last paragraph is read by like 6% of readers or 5% of total readers. Something so low that there's no rational reason to spend any time on the last paragraph. It should only be the first few paragraphs that you spend any time on, and the rest of it, you throw all the junk at the end. And that's not the way journalism used to be. It's not the way it was,
Try realized. To write something smart in. I mean, the only guy that I know that did it was Paul Harvey. Try to write something smart in one paragraph and really convey a message. The most powerful news story I've ever heard, he was way ahead of his time, most powerful news story I ever heard, and one of the reasons why I wanted to get into radio, Orson Welles and Paul Harvey. And I used to listen to him. 8 years old, I'd be washing the pots and pans at the bakery, and Paul Harvey would come on, and he'd do his noon report, and the rest of the year I'd hear his 5 o'clock report, and he'd give the news. And the most effective story I ever heard was Chicago O'Hare, Eastern Airlines, 232 dead. And that was it. And the way he said it, I could almost smell the smoke. I mean, I knew everything that I needed to know. That's really kind of what America wants right now. They just want that, plus they want a confirmation of their opinion. Tell me my opinion is right.
Yeah, and that's exactly what the author found. What became acutely obvious was when I stopped taking the recommendations was how tribal online discussions can be. So many posts in my feeds were people broadcasting their political or professional identities by expressing outrage or praise for a particular news event or article. That is what it is. It winds up being like, oh, okay.
It's because we've lost the American tribe.
Yeah.
We've broken into political party tribes because we don't have a common story that threads us together anymore.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
the Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. We're glad you're here. There's a book out called Mistakes Were Made, But Not By Me. We've talked about it a couple of times. I went and I earmarked some things in this. The book is trying to understand cognitive dissonance and why we have such an aversion to making an apology or saying, yep, that was my fault. When we claim we are hungry for people to do that, we in our own lives don't do that. Some amazing stories out of this book I want to share with you and how they apply to our life. Also, we want to get to the big news. There is big breaking news out of Miami that is stunning, and I'm not sure why the media is not. Don't laugh.
No, I'm. No, it's only so I wouldn't cry. That's why.
Yeah. You know, Al Gore was on television yesterday telling a story, and it's more than a story.
It's heart-wrenching.
It's heart-wrenching, and it's news.
Yes.
It's hard news. And why the media won't cover this is beyond me.
It's a cover-up. It's a cover-up.
Call Alex Jones. Wait until you hear the latest from Al Gore. We begin there right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to Monday. So glad that you are with us. Let's start with Al Gore breaking some pretty amazing news yesterday on Fox. Listen to this.
In 2006, you made the following comments as part of your publicity for the movie. You said, unless we took, quote, drastic measures, the world would reach a point of no return within 10 years, and you called it a true planetary emergency. Mm. We're 11 years later.
No.
Weren't you wrong?
Well, we have seen a decline in emissions for the on a global basis. For the first time, they've stabilized and started to decline. So
stop for a second.
He always changes the parameters there because he was. The question was, you said we had to take drastic measures. Now, everybody knows drastic measures have not been taken. They've not been taken.
Well, here's the deal.
And we're still not in a crisis.
He is using the 2008 financial crisis and the global recession that we have been in as a good thing.
That's true.
The best proven way to reduce emissions is economic catastrophe.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
It happened in the Soviet
Union.
Correct?
Those were not drastic measures.
No, it wasn't.
Economic downturn did not cause drastic changes.
But it's also not the way carbon emissions work. You don't stop, driving your car, and then tomorrow the Earth is like,
I
can breathe free.
Yeah, it could be up. It's usually
and
around.
Even he would admit that, right?
Of course, it's up to 200 years.
Yeah,
between 80 and 200 years usually for CO2 to dissipate out of the atmosphere.
So if we stopped it all, it would still take a minimum of 80 years.
If you stopped all cars.
It would still take a minimum of 80 years
for
that to impact the Earth.
Right. So that's got nothing to do with and by the way, leveling off because of largely a financial crisis and some other factors. But still, this is not like some incredible
downturn. No, it's a leveling off.
Nothing drastic.
So he's saying that we're not seeing the results that he predicted in the movie because we've had a leveling off, which he said... Only drastic measures happening today would be able to stop them.
The responses of the last 10 years have helped.
Unfortunately
and regrettably, a lot of serious damage has been done. Greenland, for example, is losing 1 cubic kilometer of ice every single day. I went down to Miami and saw fish from the ocean swimming in the streets on a sunny day. What? The same thing was true in Honolulu.
Wait.
In Honolulu,
stop.
I missed that the first time. It's Miami and
Honolulu,
where fish are swimming in the streets on sunny days.
Fish?
That is heart-wrenching.
Now, how did the news media miss this?
I don't know.
As you were driving your car in Miami, I want to hear from you now. Are you seeing the fish swimming in the street next to you on a sunny day.
And why are Americans in Miami hiding that?
They're hiding it.
Why won't they tell America?
Are they all working for Halliburton?
About the, of course they are. Of course they are. They must all be on the payroll.
I mean, how many people? How many
swimming in the streets?
How many global
on
warming,
sunny days?
How many global warming supporters? People who say I support Al Gore. How many of them had to die to cover up the video footage?
Too many
of the fish swimming in the streets of Honolulu and Miami.
Got to be video footage, right?
Gotta be.
Apparently,
gotta
be. This is
when
not
you take
a,
out your cell phone. Oh, if that was happening here in Dallas,
wait a minute. If I had I
would,
coverage,
I would get my camera out and shoot that.
Of course, fish, as you may know, mm-hmm. live in water.
Yes.
Occasionally, when it floods in various areas, there exactly are fish that could be theoretically on a
not
street.
Not on a sunny However, day, the Miami for the thing, love of heaven, Stu.
But the Miami thing is an interesting addition. This was actually something Barack Obama has was talked about as well.
Hmm.
He says, I think, this is in 2015, I think as the science around climate change is more accepted, people start realizing that even today you can put a price on the damage that climate change is doing. You know, you go down to Miami, and when it's flooding at high tide on a sunny day, and fish are swimming through the middle of the streets, you know, there's a cost to that.
How much does it cost? How much does that cost?
Well, there's a fish toll to cross the street. Right. Each trout has to
fish
pay
on
35
land,
cents.
I think that is, yes.
And here's the problem. There is a toll fish don't have pockets.
No,
they have no place.
No. Right.
No, so they carry
they don't have
coins
a toll
in their
tag,
mouth.
Right? Yeah. They don't have a toll tag to where they get the sun pass, where they can just boom.
This is unbelievable. Do we have Miami residents who are willing to fess up to this cover
to
up?
The fish. Mm-hmm.
To the fish.
Now, there's a difference between when there's a storm, when there's a hurricane, when there's a flood, and just the other day, I saw fish swimming in the streets
not
on a sunny day.
Same thing.
I know, not to him.
By the way, the title of the story I read that quote from, do fish really swim in Miami streets? Well, not exactly. And it's the Miami Herald, by the way.
So he's so still, when did that come out?
2015, and Gore was also talking about it in
and
2015.
And he's still talking about it over
so this is still one of his lead arguments. The other one being that he called the flood in New York City.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Because in the movie...
Well, that was a prediction come true.
It is one of the most disingenuous...
It's a lie.
I mean, it's a straight-out lie.
But it's a straight-out lie.
The levels this man has to go to accomplish this lie is fascinating. Because he said... in the movie, Inconvenient Truth, he shows the World Trade Center memorial site being flooded. Mm-hmm. And he's like, this is what would happen.
And if Greenland were to melt...
Right. Well, this is the point. Because he starts with that. And then his new pitch is, see, I told you... The World Trade Center could flood, and it happened way before I said. That's his new pitch for the sequel of Inconvenient Truth. You,
according to Thumb of the Research from Dr. Mathlaskin, in Thumb, in Thumb, or Mum.
I was actually reading something that quoted a Dr. Mathlaskin, and I'm like, shut up, it can't be the same guy. It's not. There's another Dr. Mathlaskin.
That's a long-time Al Gore quote, if you're a long-time listener. So he says this. First of all, what he predicted was not a temporary 2-day flood from Sandy, which is he's trying to take credit for now.
It's if Greenland melted.
He predicted a permanent flood of these areas.
Come on.
And a permanent flood caused by the entire melting of the Greenland ice shelf. So there's no ice in Greenland at all anymore. Okay. It all melts, falls into the sea, sea level rises 20 feet. And then these areas are flooded like this. He's taking credit as if that prediction was right. Now, what's amazing about it is he plays a clip from the movie to explain how right he is. Legitimately, the sentence, it's either the sentence before or the sentence after it, explains that what he is saying is not true. It talks about how Greenland would have to melt, or half of West Antarctica would have to melt, and half of Greenland. For this to happen, which we know has not happened, as he just explained in that clip, where he said it's one cubic kilometer or whatever
it is. Yeah, which is also kind of picking and choosing his stats.
Yes, he is definitely
because it's growing in some areas. Mm-hmm. The ice is growing in some areas and melting in others. That's what happens. It happened in the 30s, happened in the 50s. When it warms up on the planet, Iceland or Greenland melts a little bit, and then and in some other places it actually increases its ice mass. So he's always doing this, picking and choosing his numbers and changing the parameters
of
things. I'm
just so glad that we're not like that, that we'll admit that we're wrong when we're wrong. And
he will not. He's got too much invested in this.
Yeah, I know. But you're going to end up, I mean, do people not care about how you're remembered? I mean,
no, because the media helps him with how they're remembered. Look at how celebrated this guy is.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's nothing but a charlatan and a liar. But
the media, how's the media going to be remembered? I mean, I just think everything is going to come undone with all of this stuff. Lies only stand for so long. The truth eventually comes out. It may not be in the next 5 years or even 20 years. But eventually, everybody makes fun of Al Gore. At some point, Al Gore's children to great-grandchildren are sitting in class going, oh, geez, I'm not bringing up my stupid great-grandfather.
I'm less and less confident of that fact.
I mean, look at Woodrow Wilson, how Woodrow Wilson is remembered.
And though, look at pretty and look, start to turn around.
Right.
So that's positive.
It's taken 100 years, but he was the president of the United States.
Yeah, but you know, he's been dead for 100 years. He doesn't care what's happening to him now. I mean, he may have cared at the time.
Should have been the president of the United States. I'll tell you that.
What'd you say?
Stolen. Al Gore should have been the president. Tell you that.
Shut up.
Yeah.
That robbed.
But think of on Gore, because I'm glad you brought this back. Think of how disingenuous this is. If I were to say right now, the Golden State Warriors are definitely winning the NBA championship. They are going to be the champions. And they're going to, you know what? The Cleveland Cavaliers are not going to win a championship for the next 20 years, but eventually, someday, the Cavs will win. And then if the Cavs come back and win the championship this year, I come back and say, I play the tip and say, a clip that says, the Cavs will win. That is what Gore is doing with this flooding claim.
Yeah.
He is taking out all of the context of why he said the New York would flood, along with tons of other areas around the world that didn't flood in this period. And he's taking credit for that claim. It's impossible.
Because of one storm that lasted 2 or 3 days.
Right, and it was gone and everything's fine.
Gone, yeah.
All I can think of in this is why would Cleveland have a name a sports team after a bunch of baby cows?
No,
seriously.
No, the Cavaliers.
Yeah, right? It's not really a scary thing. It's like, oh, look, the baby calves are coming.
That's not how it's spelled.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
I'm really inspired by a story of an environmental attorney who dared take a stand against big business. And it's not any business, it's DuPont. He fought hard to take him down, and he didn't stop until he won. Look at all the politicians who say, we're fighting for you, but they're in the pocket of Wall Street and the corporations that make financial gains while they're sacrificing the safety of the American people. If you care about the air that you breathe, water that you drink, and food that you eat, visit projectblindsided.com and join the movement today. That's projectblindsided.com.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Remember that CCR song?
No.
Have you ever seen the fish swimming through the streets on a sunny day?
No,
remember
I haven't.
Great
but
song.
Dan in Ohio says that he has seen the fish.
Oh,
so
boy.
You're in Ohio. How did you see this, Dan?
Well, I saw it, and the first thing I thought of, and I'm actually really nervous about it, is that Alex Jones is right. The fish people have escaped their cases.
Oh my God.
Oh my gosh.
Streets in Miami.
It's happening.
The fish people have escaped their cases. In case you don't know, could you just cue it up to that place in the Megyn Kelly promo? In fact, let's just play the whole promo.
Yeah,
in case you don't know what he's talking about, Alex Jones is going to be on with Megyn Kelly on NBC next Sunday. And it's pretty darn explosive. Listen.
His authoritarianism knows humanity's awakening, and it's moving against humanity on a planetary scale. The great global battle for the future of our species is being fought right now.
They call you the most paranoid man in America. Is that true?
Absolutely not. A paranoid person will be hiding out in their house, not venturing out in public. I go out there on the...
It's actually not the dictionary definition of paranoia.
Battle Black Lives Matter, the communists, point blank range.
We talked controversies and conspiracies.
9/11.
Now, 9/11 was an inside job. But when I say inside job, it means criminal elements in our government working with Saudi Arabia and others wanted to frame Iraq for it. Just a fact.
Sandy Hook.
It's a fact. Well, Sandy Hook's complex because I've had debates where devil's advocate said the whole story's true. And then I've had debates where I've said that none of it's true.
When you say parents faked their children's death, people get very angry.
Yeah, well, I know, but they don't get angry about the $500,000 dead Iraqis from the sanctions, or they don't get angry about all the illegals pouring in.
That's a dodge.
No, it's not a dodge. The media never covers all the evil wars it's promoted. All the
that
big
doesn't
things.
Excuse what you did and said about Newtown. You know it.
Here's the difference. I looked at all the angles of Newtown, and I made my statements long before the media even picked up on it. We didn't get any of the really important stuff.
What do you mean? We talked about all the important stuff.
Well, here's the big one. They always make fun of me. You probably want to throw this in there. 30 years ago,
of course,
they began creating animal-human hybrids.
Right.
Isn't that the big story Megyn Kelly should be doing?
Yes.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yes, it is.
About 30 years
and
ago.
Good for you. She is doing that story. the human hybrid. So there you have it. A listener in Ohio has seen the human-fish hybrids.
They've now escaped.
Escaped and swimming on the streets. John will bring us back to Miami. And Al Gore's claim that fish, he has seen them swimming down the streets on a sunny day. Go ahead, John.
I was born on Miami Beach. I've been here 60 years, my whole entire life.
Yeah.
We have a king tide every year in October, and the streets flood all on Miami Beach, all over the coast of the Miami side of the intercoastal. It's been going on forever, and we're built on swampland.
Yeah,
the swampland is what's sinking, not the water rising.
Wow. It's amazing. And that's
great.
We were looking into this a little bit in the break, and that's exactly what the fact checkers say.
It's high tide.
But
John can only confirm that for 60 years.
60 it's years. Only it's called king tides, when the tides are at their highest, not during average daily tides. Also not in Miami proper, only in the low coastal outlying areas. So, like, again, every element of that is just it's very similar to what Alex Jones did with the human hybrid. There were experiments. We did this. I'm Pat and Stu a few weeks ago. I can't remember when people were talking about this. Like, there was a set of experiments a while ago where they tried to look at this. And I think the
aim was to try to grow
like a human heart,
a human heart or something that you could replace body parts with in an animal, and it didn't work out.
Right.
Which was obviously,
but it's funny in that, like, a very tiny shred of truth to make this dramatic claim to get your theology, I'll put it that way, a theology through. Your whatever religion you have with Al Gore, it's climate with him, but it's conspiracy theories with Alex Jones. But I mean, those are the same people saying they're doing the same exact thing with the issue that they love. That's pretty amazing.
Why are you covering up your pig heart? Well, why is it you're covering up your half human, half pig heart?
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
888-727-BACK.
All right, this is
the Glenn Beck Program.
I want to talk to you a little bit about business and how, I mean, an amazing business that I found on holiday that is, nobody does business this way anymore.
Found that on holiday? Might?
Who talks like that?
Have you become Australian?
I think we're all happy being back from holiday.
Are we in a different country or a different time?
What?
Are we in a different country or a different time?
I don't know anymore.
That was a weird way to put vacation.
Well, I don't know why I said holiday.
Very Aussie of you.
Is how very Aussie of me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to get to that here in a second, and this is truly amazing. Nobody believed me when I told them, when we first got together, and I told them about this business, right?
Right.
None of you believed me. Thought you mocked me and laughed before we went on the air.
Mm-hmm.
Not laughing now. When you hear the end of the story, you're like, Pat said, quote, how do I get a hold of them? we'll tell you about it coming up in just a second. First, we have, now this is not a documentary, is it?
No, this is the actual footage from the incident.
Okay, so, you know, Alex Jones is going to be on Megyn Kelly on Sunday.
And he's talking about the human-animal hybrids that they're breeding right now.
Right. The government has been breeding and hiding for
people
us.
People scoff and laugh at him? Maybe not so much now.
Right. We went onto the internet to find any of it, and we found something that proves that we're stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is, you're going to hear the doctor?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Now, you're gonna think, well, that doctor sounds weirdly like Gina Davis, but Gina Davis is not a doctor.
Is not a doctor.
So you know it's not her.
Okay.
I'm afraid.
Don't be afraid.
No. Be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Be very afraid.
Wow.
Everything about you is changing.
Oh, man.
You look bad. You smell bad.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been much of a bather.
Good dialogue here.
No, wait, hang on just a second.
That
sounds like Jeff Goldblum.
No, but you know it's not because this was just the actual occurrence.
And so what, is they made him filmed into like a cow?
Well,
or?
He's changing into a fly.
He's changing right into a fly.
This is one of those experiments.
Huh.
And apparently this guy was all brave right enough to do okay the experiment on himself.
Okay.
Released, and you can't stand it.
Right.
You'll do anything to bring me down.
Hmm. He's getting doing a donut now.
This is an odd point in history where...
Ooh, and he just barfed on it, like a fly would.
A fly barfs on donuts?
Mm-hmm.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, it sure is.
That's why you don't
how does Grungle Fly eat? Stuff. Well, he found out the hard and painful way that he's very much the way a fly eats. His teeth are now useless because although he can chew up solid food, he can't digest
terrible
it. Solid
stop
food.
Was this... documentary. Was this serious at the time? Because I remember this coming out.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a horror flick, right?
This is, I've never wanted to watch it after I saw it. This sounds hysterical.
Yeah, it does. Actually.
It sounds like a really
later,
funny movie to go see.
He regurgitates on his food. It liquefies, and then he sucks it back up.
Oh.
Ready for a demonstration, kids?
Not really.
Here it goes.
Oh my God.
Have you ever heard of insect politics?
No, actually, no. I haven't. He's vomiting on the guy now, and I think he's going to then consume him.
Okay.
So, this is an animal, though. This is
an insect
human hybrid. Which apparently didn't work out as well as you might hope.
I'll give him the benefit of the doubt that insects are kind of animals.
Sort of.
You know, I'll give him that. I didn't have the proof that insect-human hybrids were happening until now.
But. Which concept is more bizarre? Insect-human hybrids or Jeff Goldblum as a leading man? What the hell kind of decision was that?
Oh, let's put him as the star of this film.
I mean, you want to make him the eighth character in a movie? Fine.
I know.
Go ahead.
But he always plays the same character.
Yes.
He's always the guy going, this is crazy. You can't do that. It'll hurt X, Y, or Z, animal or planet. He plays the same guy. Jurassic Park.
Independence Day. This one, he's kind of he's sort of the aggressor in The Fly. Like he's pushing the limits of science, and everyone else is being
like,
hey.
That's when he was saying, he was like, you know, I have there's more to me than just
and
the
that's
gloom and doom guy.
He's talking to that doctor who, by the way, people don't know this, but actually robbed a bank with a clown and got away with it. Went to an island.
I love that documentary.
It's a fantastic and underrated.
Which documentary is that?
Quick Change with Bill Murray. Underrated.
Was that good?
Yes, it was tremendous.
Good.
The first half of that movie is one of the it's one of the best movies of the decades.
What you have to remember is this time period. Stu is very, very young. And what seemed good to like an 8 or 9 or 10 year old
Quick Change was later. No way. Oh, I stand by Quick Change.
Be good today.
With the except, by the way, it was 1990.
Okay, so I will tell you, this is how either sloppy we were, or how bad the movie was. We had Bill Murray on the show, on the Glenn and Pat show years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was to promote that movie, and neither of us had done any work on the movie. And we didn't even talk to him about that movie, and I think he was pretty okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was a great movie.
No,
it was
a great movie.
Randy Quaid is in it. So
Randy Quaid ruins every movie he's in.
That is kind of a...
Especially Independence Day. Oh, my God.
And Quick Change.
He's the Jar Jar Binks of human actors, of film.
Of film.
Yes.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of Jar Jar Binks, did you see that R2-D2 is going up for sale?
The quite a hefty price, right?
$3 million. They're expecting to get, it's at auction, $3 million.
For the original R2-D2 from A New Hope.
This is A New Hope.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That seems even not enough.
Yeah, it does not seem like... I would have actually expected more for
double digits.
mean,
but guys, I want you to remember.
$3 million is more than double digits.
$3 million is a lot.
No, it's, I'm not saying it's not.
$10 million.
Can somebody go get that book? It's on my desk.
$10 is double digits.
Somebody, Natasha, will you go get that book on my desk about the Hollywood memorabilia stuff?
Because, I mean, yes, yes, $3 million is a lot, but when you have, can translate any language, you have, can, he has lasers, electricity thing that can shock people, has a little saw that comes out and cuts like a rope.
I hate to break it. I hate to break it to you, but there was a midget inside of that.
What?
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Inside of the saw?
A, that's a lie.
No.
B, midget is very inappropriate.
And, I mean, there was a little person inside. Does the little person come with it?
No.
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 That's confirmed?
So you've got a big piece of plastic for $3 million.
Although, wouldn't you love to have that? Wouldn't you love to have that?
Oh, my gosh.
That'd be incredible.
And there's the whole
But how bad would you feel, honestly? You know, because somebody has to say to the person who gets it, just if you know the person who gets it, unless it's a museum, you gotta say to the person, you know how many people you could have fed with $3 million?
Yeah. I mean, you have to.
You would at some point go, I paid $3 million for a piece of plastic that in 100 years nobody will have any idea what it's about.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's true. With Star Wars, either. I mean, you know, we know the movie. I mean, Gone with the Wind is gonna, people are gonna know what it
and
is.
And look at what happens with the prices of stuff from Gone with the Wind.
Yeah, low.
This is yeah.
Star Wars, Gone with the Wind, right?
And let me take a break. This is an auction. I think this auction is really made for museums. If Mercury had more money, we would be. I could open a Mercury Museum
just
tomorrow,
with that piece, I think.
Just with that piece. But just with the stuff that's in this, there's some amazing things in here. But it shows how shallow these things are. Because once it gets past the childhood, once it gets past the, oh, that was my childhood, that was, oh, I remember that, with very few exceptions, Mary Poppins, Wizard of Oz, Willy Wonka, it goes away. Now, Star Wars will hang because it's been generational.
Yeah.
But there's very few things of your childhood. There's lots of stuff in here you're like, oh my gosh, I remember that. And that was important, but not anymore. Now it's like, yeah, give me $1.50, I'll give you the plastic sword. I mean, it's really quite amazing what you think might go for something and is actually declining in value. And then the new hot things are going up in value.
That's interesting. I mean, but Star Wars is the thing.
Wars changed everything. Star Wars is in a league of its own. The lightsaber that Obi-Wan threw to Luke and said, this was your father's, that's up for sale, that one.
Wow.
And again, it's a piece of plastic. $2.5 million.
You getting that?
No, surprisingly,
really?
No, I'm not. No, I just want to put it into context. The Constitution, the first draft of the Constitution that belonged to George Washington and had his signature and notes on it went for $10 million. A piece of plastic that does nothing is $3 million.
And it may surpass that.
I think it will.
When is the auction?
This week. No, next week. 26th, 27th, and 28th.
They take checks?
from you? Probably not.
You're listening.
You're listening
to the Glenn Beck Program.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Sign up for the newsletter and get all the info you need to know at glennbeck.com.
So you want to go to pop culture. And how valuable is pop culture after a while? For instance, the flying monkey capes, you know, from Wizard of Oz, you can buy those now for $3,000. The spear is $12,000, one of the spears they did. Another one of the flying capes is $3,000. So that one's kind of holding its value. Gone with the Wind, Rhett's jacket is for sale at auction between $40,000 and $60,000.
Yeah.
So that's still pretty good. But Casablanca, the Doors,
of the, you know, Rick's Cafe American, $150,000 for the full doors.
What?
But the set pieces are $20,000. That's Casablanca, probably the most famous American movie that I can think of. The original King Kong. Props from the original King Kong, $1,500 is the most expensive. Mm.
Wow.
That's the original King
Those
Kong.
Be some cool stuff. That would be some nice stuff to have from that movie, too.
But listen, so that's the original King Kong, $1,200. The petticoat, not the dress, the petticoat worn by Mary Poppins, $8,000, in the movie. Try this. You think that there's some things that just don't hold their value? Lucille Ball's black and white dotted dress, the most famous dress she's ever done, sold in auction. It doesn't say what year, for $168,000. It's now estimated to go between $40,000 and $60,000 at this auction. The actual Superman cape from The Adventures of Superman, the one that we watched when we were kids, the black and white, and then it went to full color, that Superman, George Reeves, the actual Superman cape and body outfit, $20,000.
Hmm.
To put that into perspective, Jerry Seinfeld's puffy shirt, $15,000. His puffy shirt. Kramer's jacket, $800. Let's see, there's a couple of James Gandolfini's Tony Soprano costume, $6,000. I mean, how many of those did he wear?
The Kramer's jacket, that's the one with him having the pipe, right? And he had that, they're kind of
They have the pipe and the glasses for sale, too.
Really?
Yeah, the puffy shirt is, you remember the puffy shirt.
Right, but the Kramer's jacket, though, there's a famous poster of him that kind of...
the one that he wore all the time, that brown jacket that he wore all the time.
Yeah. That's a deal at $800, I would say.
No doubt. I think
so, too. Wear that one to parties, so that would be fun.
Yeah, Clint Eastwood's hat, the one that you've always seen him in, $15,000. Anyway...
Wow.
The disco, who even knew this was even still intact? The Saturday Night Fever dance floor.
Wow.
Does it still work?
It still works. Let me read this. It's amazing.
That'd be kind of cool to have.
That would.
Yeah. Dance floor, blah, blah, blah. How much do you think this went for? For 1975, the floor remains as it was constructed for the film. It has been used for a couple of things. It went from the movie to the Spectrum in New York and was the dance floor in the Spectrum until 77. Mm. Then it was taken out and used for a Glee tribute episode called Saturday Night Gleaver.
Do you remember that one?
Going for $1.5 million.
Wow.
The dance floor from Saturday Night Fever. How much are the ears of Spock? Original? $6,000.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Boy, we are running out of time. We have a lot to talk about. We want to touch on Brexit. Theresa May, I mean, you know, pigs get slaughtered is the Wall Street term. She got greedy and she thought she was going to have even a bigger landslide behind her. She calls for elections. Now it looks like she's going to be out in the next 6 months. They're calling her a lame duck prime minister. It was foolish. And now it looks like Brexit is also up in the air. Same time, while we were talking about the memo and the Comey letter, the rest of the world was paying attention to what was happening over in the Middle East. You're beginning to see the new fight for the caliphate. It is progressed so far to now people are positioning themselves on who's going to run this caliphate. We'll tell you what happened to Qatar over the last week. We do that right now.
I will make a stand. I will raise my voice. I will hold your hand.
entertainment, and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Oh, let's go. Let's start with the Middle East. What we're witnessing now is, in real time, the fundamental transformation of the Middle East. When it is all said and done, I believe new countries are going to have merged. Old countries will have changed their national boundaries, and a new caliphate may be born. A real caliphate, not the ISIS caliphate. What happened just in the last 2 weeks is truly amazing, because the Middle East is being redrawn now at a level that hasn't been seen since the French and the British did it in World War I. This is going to impact all of us. Nobody's been giving you, I think, this information, so let me give you this information so you have it. And I'm going to do a chalkboard tonight at 5 o'clock on the Blaze TV. You can subscribe or watch at theblaze.com/TV. But what we're seeing now is, imagine if the world had social media, it had Facebook and everything else in 1916, and we were able to witness the Sykes-Picot Agreement play out. We're seeing Sykes-Picot too. Now, Sykes-Picot is the reason we have ISIS. It is the French and the English divvying up the Middle East, drawing new boundaries. That's why you have the Kurds without a state. That's why Israel is where it is and the borders are where they are. That wasn't natural. That was Europe coming in and saying, okay, French, you own this part, we own this part, and they divvied it up. The outcome of these guys fighting for their own territory and fighting over the head of the caliphate is yet unknown, but it is going to become very, very dangerous. Last week, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Egypt, and the UAE severed all diplomatic ties with Qatar.
And Yemen and the Maldives had already done that.
Now, did you guys hear about that? Kind of?
Yeah, only in vacation headlines.
And was anybody, did you hear anybody say, this is really important?
No.
Here's why this is important. Not only did they cut off all diplomatic ties with Qatar, but they also cut off all land, sea, and air routes to Qatar. Why is Qatar an important nation? Well, Qatar is the home of Al Jazeera. You know, the one that Hillary Clinton says feels like a real network because you don't get commercials on it.
Mm-hmm.
Al Jazeera failed over here in the United States, no matter how hard people push for it. It failed here in the United States. They have been influencing the Middle East, but it is the Qatari government that is running Al Jazeera, and they are part of the Muslim Brotherhood. So this is unprecedented. We've never seen anything like this. They are one of the leading sponsors. They're number two on the leading sponsors of terror in the Middle East. The Saudis are the lead financiers for radical Islam. And it seems weird that anybody in the Saudis, you know, anybody in the Saudi world be like, hey, these guys are dangerous. but there's a fundamental difference between the way the Saudis and the Qataris do business. They sponsor Islamist groups specifically to bring about regime change in the Middle East. Saudi Arabia is not doing that. They bring about regime change over in the United States and abroad. They're also a refuge for the Muslim Brotherhood, which has been busy infiltrating governments in Egypt, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, the entire Middle East, like Iran. They not only support the Sunni groups, but also the Shia radicals as well. They just want unrest, and they'll take it from either side. So finally, the neighbors around Qatar said, yeah, I don't think this is going to be happening anymore. So now let's consider everything that's happening in the Middle East. ISIS declared the first caliphate in the modern era. Now they're in their death throes. Syria barely even exists anymore as an actual country. Iraq as well, barely can be called a legitimate nation state. A Kurdish Marxist Leninist state is about to be born in what used to be called northern Syria.
The democratic Kurdish state in northern Iraq is on the verge of becoming their own nation. So in all of this chaos, the strongest players in the region are looking at the chessboard and looking to take advantage. Iran has basically already taken control of the Iraqi government, and their militia is spread all the way over, all the way to the Mediterranean. They're looking to create what they call a Shia crescent, which will enable Iran to project more power in ways than it has been able to ever before. Turkey just sent troops to Qatar. All of the Middle Eastern nations are against Qatar. Turkey has been promising troops forever. They finally sent troops now into Qatar. So they're backing Qatar. Why? Because they're a Muslim Brotherhood state. So what happens after the ISIS capital of Raqqa falls and the U.S. coalition abandons the Syrian Kurds? Turkey is going to sweep in. Turkey can't have the Syrian Kurds. They're a Leninist, Marxist, terrorist group that we're backing now. They'll move in. Will they take Mosul? Who could stop them? Who's going to stop Turkey at this point? And why would Turkey do that? Because Erdogan wants to be the leader of the caliphate. So sides are being taken now. And this is why the Saudis and the Gulf neighbors did what they did last week. Qatar has to decide, are you on team Saudi Arabia, which is getting weaker and weaker because of the oil prices, or are you on team Turkey? This is a move to force Turkey's hand. Erdogan responded. He picked team Turkey. He picked Qatar, not Saudi Arabia.
It would be weird if he wouldn't do his own country.
I'm going with the other guys. Yeah. They seem right. to have it all together.
So the old Sykes-Picot lines are falling apart, and what you're seeing now, and it's going to be interesting and quite frightening to watch, but the power vacuum is going to be filled. And Saudi Arabia and all of these things could change in the next year or so. And you saw the beginning of it with Qatar.
Yeah, they're saying that that Qatar may have to close down Al Jazeera as a result of all of this.
Wow.
Where is Hillary Clinton going to get her news?
Ties. All right.
Where is she going to get her news?
I don't know.
Well, that's because they are, this is what we talked about under Barack Obama when he was cozying up, and everybody has cozied up to Qatar, and they were selling Al Jazeera to us. It's Muslim Brotherhood. Mm-hmm. When you are too radical for Saudi Arabia, maybe we should have known that the whole time. Maybe we should have admitted that the whole time.
Yeah, and what's not to love about Al Jazeera? Do I need to remind you of what Hillary said?
And in fact, viewership of Al Jazeera is going up in the United States because it's real news. You may not agree with it, but you feel like you're getting real news around the clock instead of a million commercials and, arguments between talking heads and the kind of stuff that we do on our news, which, is not particularly informative.
The heads don't talk because they're rolling on the ground.
They're rolling on the ground. You say that opinion and you die. So you're right. There are no talking heads.
That is really incredible.
That's incredible.
That she would say that state-sponsored, Arabic state-sponsored Al Jazeera is real
from
news.
The number two
Our networks aren't.
The number two source of terror.
Unbelievable.
Oh, when we worked at CNN, there's a lot of love for state-sponsored broadcasting. Among that sort of journalistic, and it's funny because CNN is obviously not, as much as it's agreed with the state at times, it's certainly not right now. It's not a state-sponsored entity. It's a private company. They're making a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But man, a lot of the journalists there believe that that's a good model. Like the BBC is a really good model. You get real news from those things. And it's like, well, is that real? I mean, you're getting, if it's state-sponsored, yes, you can have some disagreement. And, the BBC does some things with their news that is, they do some good reporting, obviously.
They do good reporting.
However, they do a lot that winds up falling directly in line with what the state believes. And it's certainly much more dramatic in places like, Qatar.
You would never have, if you understood the balance of power and you understood the Constitution, you would never have state-sponsored media. Never.
No, and by the way, we have it too. We just have options.
Yeah.
We just have options.
Yeah.
But I mean, the same thing happens there. I mean, it should not exist. They should not be in that business at all.
Well, I will tell you this. Even the Republicans are confused on who our friends are. Who was it? Dana Rohrabacher?
Yeah.
Who? I don't know if you heard this.
Such a bizarre.
Listen to this.
We have recently seen an attack on Iran and the Iranian government. The mullahs believe that Sunni forces have attacked them. This may signal a ratcheting up of certain commitments by the United States of America. And as far as I'm concerned, I just want to make this point and see what you think. Isn't it a good thing for us to have the United States finally backing up Sunnis who will attack Hezbollah and the Shiite threat to us? Isn't that a good thing?
That's ISIS.
Well, and if so, maybe this is a Trump, maybe it's a Trump strategy of actually supporting one group against another, considering that you have two terrorist organizations.
That's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, and the guy doesn't even know how to answer it. Listen to this.
Those attacks were claimed by the Islamic State. It's never in our interest to support a terrorist group like the Islamic State.
I mean,
we should condemn the attacks in Iran as we would condemn any act of terrorism,
even
as we hold Iran accountable for its sponsorship.
Yes. So that's like Joe Stalin was a horrible guy. We must never associate with horrible guys like that, even to get Hitler. And so
maybe these guys are Hitler.
Idea to
have these guys are the modern day Hitler.
Muslim terrorists fighting each other. I'll leave it at that.
I mean,
having
coordinated the economic warfare plan against the Islamic State, I would not condone an attack by the Islamic State.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it is.
Just incredible.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
This is really exciting. 1791 is doing something this coming weekend here at the studios in Las Colinas. This is the first opportunity for somebody to, for customers to shop in person for 1791. Everything that 1791 makes is made here in the United States, and they've committed themselves to making a high-quality product. And because we've made them here in America, our jeans, the Edward Jansen line jean is, I think, what, $60 or $70? Still, it's not, you know, a Walmart price, but it's not a Walmart jean either. It's not made in China. This is really good denim made here in the United States. Anyway, they're having a...
By elves in a hollow tree.
No.
That's actually no, I think the headquarters.
Those are the cookies.
Oh.
Those are the cookies.
Will there be cookies this weekend?
I don't know if there's cookies. But anyway, the studios will be open this weekend, Saturday, noon to 6, and Sunday, 2 to 6. And you'll be able to come by, and they've got food, and yes, so I guess they do have cookies.
Yes.
They have food and everything else, and a chance for you to shop as we clean out the warehouse of 1791. Go to 1791.com for more information. That is this weekend. I was reading a book on vacation. Mistakes Were Made, But Not By Me. And in it, you know, it talks about how there's this cognitive dissonance and how you just don't want to say that you've made mistakes. And there's something that through the evolutionary process of being able to be able to handle, you know, the things that you've done, the things that you've thought, et cetera, that you actually have a self-protecting mechanism that won't let you look at the things that you have done, and it just kind of, you just justify it.
Deny.
Yeah, I know, Jeffy. And yet we are people that really want, somebody else to tell the truth. When it comes down to it, we want somebody else. We just, oh man, I just wish somebody would just say it was my fault. Well, there's a couple of stories here that I think are amazing of people who have told that said it was their fault, and they should be known. I think these guys are heroes. Listen to this one. Wayne Hale Jr. Ever heard of him before? Ever heard his name?
No.
Mm-mm. You should. Wayne Hale Jr., he was the launch integration manager at NASA. So I think he's the guy who says, you know, to all of the different departments, are we good to go? We good to go? We good to go? We good to go? And he makes the final launch decision, I think. In 2003, he was the launch integration manager at NASA for the space shuttle Columbia. Columbia blew up. Before there was an inquiry, before anybody even said what the heck happened, he wrote an email to all of NASA. Listen to this. I had the opportunity and the information, and I failed to make use of it. I don't know what an inquest or a court of law would say, but I stand condemned in the court of my own conscience to be guilty of not preventing the Columbia disaster. We can discuss the particulars, inattention, incompetence, distraction, lack of conviction, lack of understanding, a lack of backbone, or laziness. But the bottom line is, I failed to understand what I was being told. I failed to stand up and be counted. Therefore, I look no further because I am guilty of allowing Columbia to crash.
Wow.
Holy cow.
Wow.
So what happened to that guy? What do you think happened to him?
Got fired? Promoted?
I mean, the risk of doing that is you are essentially convicting yourself for people looking for a head.
Yeah.
Right? Someone's looking for heads or roll, and now you're telling them which head should roll.
Here's what happened to him. After this, he was promoted to manager of the entire space shuttle program at NASA.
Wow.
You want somebody with integrity. Wow. You want someone with integrity. That guy has it. Back in a minute.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Couple things. I want to tell you about a small business that I found, and I found it through my son-in-law. I thought it was pretty amazing. You know, if you're a longtime listener of the program, you know that I have had a problem with the water company in my town.
Minor. Minor well, issue.
A $10,000 minor issue.
Right.
They said that we used $10,000 worth of water at my home in a month, and you know, we had people come out and estimate, and there's no way for every faucet on that we could use $10,000 worth of water, but that's a different story. So my kids live down the street, and they got a water bill for, like, I don't know, $900 or $1,100, something like that, and there's no way they're using that. And I'm like, it's this water company. So they call Berkey's, this place that has dug up my front lawn before and found nothing. And they called Berkey's, and Berkey's came out and said, okay, well, there's water down here by your fence, so maybe you got a leak someplace. We can dig up your lawn. And they were like, no, we just saw that movie. No, we're not going to do that. $5,000. So they're talking about it amongst friends, and a guy who works here, Mark, he said, oh, I've got a pipe whisperer. And
whispers to pipes,
apparently. So, and
I had a friend called that a long time ago too.
What'd you say?
I had a friend called that a long time ago too.
Yeah, I don't want to hear about that. Anyway, so a pipe whisperer, and he said, I know this sounds crazy, but he comes and he puts his ear to your faucets, and he's
so weird.
Okay, $250.
This is not true. You're making this up.
This is absolutely true. It was like $256, okay, for him to come out. And Tim said, we just felt like idiots. You know, he comes out and he's like, I need to listen to the garden hose. You know, what is the garden hose going to say to you? I feel all tense and wrapped up inside. What is a garden hose?
I aspire to be a snake someday.
So he puts the, you know, hose to his ear. And he's like, nope, this is off. I gotta go.
It's not wet. It's off.
Gotta go to the other one. Nope, this one's off. I got to go inside. I have to listen to the toilet. He puts his ear on the toilet.
Stop it.
Swear to you. Swear to you. Listens to the sinks. Listens to everything. Okay. Now, at this point, Tim is like, this is
crazy.
What have I done? What have I done? I'm listening to a guy who's walking around listening to the faucets. Right. And he is like that. He's like, shh, I have to have total silence, please. And so he goes into a bathroom that, and don't ask me how, somehow is connected, you know, the bathroom's connected to the swimming pool. I don't know how, but, and it's, I'm never, remind me never to swim there. But somehow or another, he put his, he went outside and he listened to the toilet out there, and he was like, this is running, but it's not the toilet. He's like, where's your pool stuff? And he's like, oh, over here. He listens to his all off, and he's just listening. Shh, quiet. This is running. Where's your drain? And he goes over to the drain and lifts off the cover, and he's listening. And he's like, this is running. And he's like, no, it's not. It's off. No, this is running. Yeah, your stopper is, your whatever it's called, is broken. The thing that, like, you have a little floaty in the toilet tank that tells you that the pool is full.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, it's broken. Show me where that is. And somehow or another, Tim knew where it was. It took him over, and he's like, it's broken. Look, it's on. And the pool was not telling itself that it was off. And so it was just continually filling up and draining the water down by the fence where they wanted to dig it up.
Mm.
$256.
Amazing. So the guy really did find
the
problem.
He really did.
And they fixed it?
And so here it is. $256 fixed, and he said, Tim was like, I got to pay you more. That would have cost me $5,000, and I would have had nothing. And he's like, no, it's $256. That's what I charge. That's it. He's like,
wow.
I'm thrilled that we found it. So this is, it's not like, it's, the name of the company is S&S Leak Detective. they were referred to us, I guess, by the Leak Geeks. And his name is Sean Janky.
Wasn't Ace Ventura Leak Detective? that doesn't sound like a real job.
Yeah, I know.
But it was, apparently.
And I mean, amazing. We sat
to listen to the pipe and just discern the problem from that. That's amazing. That's amazing.
It's two times now.
And a little bit creepy.
Mark has had this done at his house. Had a leak. They couldn't find it. And he said, so a friend said, oh, you got to get this pipe whisperer. And apparently he's got other people in the company that do it. I think it's not just him. And he's
you can trade. You can be.
He's like, it's the easiest thing. He said, nobody wants to do it in our business. And he said, you know, it makes it into like some magical thing. He said, it's really easy. You just have to have quiet and listen. He said, but you can find it every time. That's incredible. I've never heard of that.
Well, I would assume too, like it's a better business decision to, you know, dredge up a $10,000 repair through a yard. So a lot of people probably don't want to do it for that reason.
Yeah, you know? Maybe. But guess who I'm calling every time I got a problem?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so. And I'm not talking about the people who dug up my yard for, I think it was $20,000. I'm not talking to them about on the radio.
It's interesting. Pat is actually working on a series called Leakages, which
really,
it's for the Blaze.
Been in the works for a while.
Yeah. But I mean, this might be somebody you could interview on that show.
Yeah, good. Leakages.
It's very.
Pat has spent.
I would actually like to. I'd like to see him do his work.
I've spent $73.5 trillion in the development of this series. So
really, that might be a little out of budget.
When it goes to the air, it's going to be phenomenal.
So it should be. I mean, how much was it?
$73.5 trillion.
Wow, you
know, so far.
Well, it's your money.
Oh, it's not
so
finished.
Under production.
Yeah. Oh, no. So is this like Ken Burns, you know, the Civil War or Bees or one of those that just never ends?
Well, we'll see.
The rumor is it might just be a webisode. It might not actually be a full.
Right. But man, will it be a worthwhile webisode?
So informative.
So is it on like Solyndra? Is that what this is?
Oh, no, it's a Blaze product.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
You're saying, is it like referencing something?
I didn't know if it was.
It's about water leaking, right, Pat? I mean, generally
it's
speaking.
About leakages.
It's about things that leak.
It's not like
a lot like this pipe whisperer. Perhaps we'll be interviewing him.
You could have saved some money just hiring him, probably.
Yeah, could have just put him on for $256.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
Glenn Beck Program.
On tomorrow's program, top of hour two, Jim DeMint in his first interview after leaving the Heritage Foundation, and I should say being forced out of the Heritage Foundation, and now with the Convention of States. His first interview will be with us tomorrow, top of hour two, and top of hour three this hour will be Bill O'Reilly will be joining us. And that's always fun if you have a very cruel sense of humor. Because Bill is a very cruel, cruel man. Very cruel.
To you, at least.
Yeah. He's always warm at the very beginning, though.
Yeah. Hey, Beck.
He's, yeah.
I mean, you can just feel it dripping off of him.
Yeah.
It's overwhelming.
Really yeah. Really. So we found out that Pat went to a gay pride parade on his vacation.
It was somewhat of a surprise.
You're bringing your family downtown, and you stumble into a gay pride parade.
You walked right through the gay pride parade where they were
pride.
Very festive and very prideful.
So any difference between the gay pride parade you were at and the one that happened in LA over the weekend?
Because the one I was at seemed to be promoting gay pride. The one in Los Angeles yesterday seemed to be promoting absolute hatred for Donald Trump. It was the hashtag resist march. In fact, they changed the name from gay pride to resist march. Resisting Trump. And has nobody told these guys that he is the most gay-friendly president ever elected?
Ever
elected.
Isn't he not the first at the convention to talk about equal rights for gay couples and gay marriage from the beginning? No hedging, nothing.
One position I don't think he's changed.
No.
He's been gay-friendly and pro-gay marriage. Forever, as far as I know.
How is he? He's the guy who said yes to bathrooms during the campaign,
right?
Yeah, he was on that side of the bathroom issue. I think what people get confused on that is that obviously Barack Obama supported gay marriage as president. However, he did not run for president in 2008.
He was very traditional.
So Trump never has been.
Right. His re-election came as a candidate who was warm to gay marriage. However, yes. Trump's first election came. He took office as a supporter.
And seriously, what has he done to get the ire up of the gay community?
I don't know.
Seems like just kind of standard, sort of political process.
Just because he's like, Republican?
I think it's
it just shows how mindless
because he's not conservative really either. Admittedly so. Mm-hmm. But one of the people that was interviewed there said, "I'm here because we all deserve equality, and our president really is not respecting that right now."
What? How?
And he's making a mockery of the Constitution. Well, you had no problem with Obama making a mockery of the Constitution, and what is it he's making a mockery of other than what the executive orders the. Yeah, all the things that Obama was doing that now are suddenly some kind of...
Executive order is a great example, though. Obama passed a pro-gay rights executive order. It was rumored during the campaign that Trump would overturn it if he won, and then he didn't. He just kept it in. Which is, depending on your perspective, fine. But this is not a guy who should be getting...
There's lots of reasons to attack Donald Trump. Real reasons you could attack Donald Trump if you don't agree with him. This is not one.
Yeah,
I can't think of, honestly, maybe we're missing something, but I can't think of anything that he has said or done.
Now, some of the issues Trump is passionate about are typically paired, right, politically with gay rights issues. Abortion, immigration, things like that traditionally fall in those pockets, but they're not,
So are you saying that gay people have to be...
That's exactly what I'm saying, Glenn. Thank you for summarizing. All gay people must be.
No, but that's what they're saying.
Right.
That all gay people have to fall in line and say, I believe this about the border. I believe this about abortion because I'm gay.
Obviously, that's crazy, right?
That's bigoted to say that.
I think there's something to say that when you are allied with someone politically for a long period of time, you might see the world their way more often. If when you're a gay rights activist and you're talking about gay marriage and your allies are for decades or a few years
you know, people who are on the far left. Now that the people on the far left who are worried about immigration reform, or worried about abortion, or worried about these other things, you may see the world the same way and still keep fighting. Like, for example, equality is such a generic word that applies to anything you want to complain about, where they'll say, well, women's, you know, women in the workplace, no, there's no equality. And, you know, Trump has obviously had issues with that.
I just don't understand the intellectual honesty problem. I mean, honestly, when you have Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama paying people in the White House, women made less in the Barack Obama White House than men did.
In the Clinton campaign.
Right. Clinton campaign did the same thing. I just don't understand the intellectual dishonesty.
Wouldn't it be more effective? Because it goes back to what you were talking about with this book before with the NASA guy who admitted this is my fault. I screwed up with Columbia. It's saying, like, if you were a gay activist and saying, look, I still completely disagree with Donald Trump on X, Y, and Z issue. But let me tell you, you know, honestly, on gay rights, he's been pretty okay. Certainly better than any other Republican president we've ever had. He's certainly, I mean, without question, the most liberal Republican presidential president in history when it comes to that issue. I mean, there's not even an argument on it. And so wouldn't it be better to say, look, I give him a lot of credit for what he's done here, but let me tell you what he's wrong on.
Oh,
it would give you credibility on those issues.
You'd have credibility. If Gay Pride Parade wanted to say, we're against Donald Trump, and they had signs because, you know, something legitimate about women, something legitimate about, you know, abortion, and they say, we're standing with our friends who believe these things and made it about that, that's fine. But to say we're going after him because, you know, he hates gay people or whatever is craziness, is absolute craziness.
Doesn't make any sense.
And people stop listening to you.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.